Aaron Pribble is with us in the studio on Sports Byline, and we're talking about his very insightful and interesting book, and it had some very unusual angles to it as well. We'll get into that a little bit later on. It's called Pitching in the Promised Land, a story of the first and only season in the Israel Baseball League. How informed are Israelis about the Jewish people in general over there about baseball?
Very little. They're not well informed. And this is actually a good time to bring up that a documentary was made about our summer called Holy Land Hardball by two guys, Brett Rapkin and Eric Kessin. It's a phenomenal documentary. And one of the things that's interesting about it is they interview ordinary Israelis. And the most common response by Israelis were, baseball? We don't have the sport in Israel, you know, or something like that. So not well informed. Sports like basketball and soccer, I think, are maybe more attuned to the pace of Israelis and their attention span. So for that reason, games were 7 innings instead of 9. And initially, we were going to start counts at 1-1, you know, instead of 0-0. That would have been insane. I'm really glad we didn't do that. 7 innings were fine. But what happens when you're tied at 7 innings? You can't go to 12, 13, 14 innings. So games were settled with a home run derby, believe it or not.
Tell me a little bit about the attendance. What kind of attendance did you have at the games?
On some days, like opening day and the All-Star game, we had several thousand people in attendance. We had TV crews. We had stands, chairs to fill extra people, standing room only, you know, little kids running up and down the sidelines, behind the fence, chasing balls. It was real baseball. It was legitimate baseball like you'd find anywhere in America. You go to a minor league park, and this would fit right in. However, the normal game, Tuesday afternoon, something like that, when you're in Bet Shemesh and the Ra'anana Express are playing the Petah Tikva Pioneers, maybe we have 19 people there. Maybe, you know, so not well attended outside of those big events.
What did they charge for tickets?
That's a good question, and I'm not sure. $5? This is a total guess. This is you know, bald speculation.
Obviously, they didn't paper the house.
No, they certainly did not. And, of course, you know, I don't know much about the business plan. That wasn't my angle. That wasn't the story that I wanted to tell. But ultimately, how are you going to generate revenue, right? So ticket sales were a big part of that equation. Speaking of ticket sales, on opening day, you know, how do you charge? Do you take the ticket stub? Is there a turnstile and you go right through? They didn't really have those details worked out, especially on opening day. Afterwards, after that first game with the thousands of people, fans are mobbing the field. They're mobbing players. A guy's glove gets stolen. Some equipment goes away. And guys were scared about a terrorist attack. So guys came back to where we were staying afterwards, and they said, guys, we could have been hurt. There's some security concerns that we need to work out. And the very next day, we're approached by some of the league administrators, and they talked to us about security. They said, you guys need to watch each other's back. You know, this is a large group of Americans that's high profile. You're in the Middle East. Some people might know you're here. And we all kind of collectively looked around and went, oh, man, this is maybe more serious than we thought.
Also, you mentioned about Dr. Ruth. I'm trying to picture this in my mind, little Dr. Ruth, because she is very small.
Yes.
You know, out there. Tell me a little bit about her.
It's unbelievable. Well, it turns out I'm starting the game, and it's in Tel Aviv. And Friday mornings, it's the one early game of the week. So, you know, as baseball players, you kind of end up being like a night job. Like you're working a night job. You rise late. You work late, whatever. It's Friday morning. Everybody's kind of grumpy because we're at the field and we don't necessarily want to be there that early or whatever. I'm warming up and the guys take the field, and it's like 5 or 7 minutes before we're ready. And of course, I'm really angry. I'm upset. I'm thinking, guys, what are you doing? I need some more practice tosses in the bullpen. So I turn around and hurl some tasty curse words at my teammates. And all of a sudden I see there's this little blonde lady who's on the mound. And I'm thinking, you know, who is this? I break focus. All of a sudden, I hear over the PA, and ladies and gentlemen, the sex doctor, Dr. Ruth, here to throw the first pitch. And I break focus. I go, you got to be kidding me. And she's Jewish, and she's here throwing out a first pitch. The rest of that, or the next part of that story, is we're playing the Bet Shemesh Blue Sox, which are like the Yankees of Israel. They got the pinstripes. They're blue, the whole deal. They had some heavy hitters like the Yankees. And we get into a near brawl. Guy steps up to the plate, hits a home run for our team, just like a bomb. But their catcher thought that he pimped it a little bit, you know, like he flew his bat in the air or whatnot. He comes around to home plate. They exchange words, the catcher and the pitcher, and they go kind of chest to chest. And a little bit of, like, some words are exchanged. A guy gets hit. The bench is clear. This is in the subsequent innings. And right as the bench is clear, we hear from the PA, the true story, literally, Dr. Ruth goes, "Now, boys, if you play nice, I promise you great sex for the rest of your lives."
And did they stop fighting?
No, we went back at it.
One of the things in the book that you talk about is the different players and how, you mentioned about the Dominicans and others that were playing, but also you had an Australian,
yep.
Kind of a little bit of a crazy guy.
A wild man catcher, Dane Wigg. One of the beautiful things about the league was we got to learn about different cultures through these players who became really close friends. You know, the beautiful thing about sports and teammates is a teammate is kind of like a brother and a friend, but also a businessman rolled into one. So you get to meet all these crazy people. Dane Wigg was our catcher from Australia, and he was one heck of a catcher. He was a great defensive catcher, but he was a wild man. He got into it with a cab driver on one of his first days in Israel, and the story goes that the cab driver pulled out a gun on Dane Wigg when he wouldn't pay the fare, and he was trying to be a wise guy. Whether or not that was a story or real life, we're not sure.
Anybody else that stands out in your mind?
Gosh, that's a great question. There, I feel blessed to be around a number of characters, guys on my team that ended up as characters in the book. A guy named Dan Rotham was the first of only two Israelis ever to play Division I baseball in the United States. You know, another question about the book is, what about the Israelis? What's the infrastructure? Could they play in this league? And this guy, Dan Rotham, a very, very bright guy, works on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and a darn good baseball player. So he's one guy that I really felt fortunate to be around. I think I may have mentioned a guy named Nate Fish earlier on. We were talking about the gas. His full name, Nathan Israel Bloomberg Fish. He looks like a combination between like Moses and Howard Stern or something like that. He's got this shoulder-length, black, curly hair. In college, he was Kevin Euclid's roommate at the University of Cincinnati. Both played together, both Jewish. Nate Fish now runs a baseball academy in New York, and he's going to be the coach of the Israeli National League team this summer. But Nate Fish's occupation, it used to be in Brooklyn, where he's from, when he was not a graffiti artist, a street artist, he was spinning records as a DJ. So Nate Fish, the DJ slash street artist, was one heck of a character. He's in the movie Holy Land Hardball. He was probably the iconic figure of the IBL.
One of the things that I know, having been a pitcher myself and you being a pitcher, is that we like consistency with our umpires when they call balls and strikes.
Yes.
And I'm trying to figure out, knowing the limited background there, what the umpires might have been like.
I was thinking of putting a chapter in the book, which is not in there, something like umpires, and like one sentence about how poor they were. Didn't make it in there. Players like to rag on the umpires, and I kind of feel like saying that they were terrible or not very good would be kind of like a cop-out. But the umpires were not as skilled as they should have been. Let's just put it that way. We had these awards at the end of the summer called the Schnitzel Awards, kind of like just like an impromptu, sarcastic award show. And the award for best umpire, which really means the worst umpire, was a German that everybody referred to as the Nazi. We'll put it that way.
The one thing I do know is that baseball is baseball, no matter
yes.
where you go. And was it like that over there?
Absolutely. That's a really neat thing. Doesn't matter where you are. For me, what's engaging about the story is it's in the Holy Land and everything that entails, being in the Middle East. But once you step on the field, baseball is baseball. The bases, to my knowledge, were 90 feet. At least I hope they were. The mound was 60 feet, 6 inches. And the game was a game. Granted, we're playing 7 innings instead of 9. Ties settled with the home run derby. But we were competing, fighting, cussing, crying, having strikeouts, ground balls, just like anywhere else on the planet. And the powerful thing about sports, I really believe this, is that it can unify people and disparate cultures from all over the world. There's a time where Nate Fish and I go into the West Bank.
I want to talk about that in the next segment. I really want to get into that. But we only got about 45 seconds before we have to break. Any special promotions for games like they have here in the major leagues or the minor leagues?
Gosh, nothing's coming to mind right now. They had kosher hot dogs before games, stuff like that. I can't think of any special promotions, but I tell you, during the first game, like at any baseball game, they say, your kid, so it's little Sammy's at the scorer's table, please report. Well, when they say, Yehuda, please report to the scorer's table, your son Sam Weinberg is here. That's a little of the color of the league.
This is a wonderful book, and I want to urge everyone to pick it up and read it because I think it will make you smile and laugh out loud. It's called Pitching in the Promised Land. a story of the first and only season in the Israel Baseball League. And the author is with us. That's Aaron Pribble. And when we come back on the other side, we'll talk about a very emotional and special trip that he and Nate Fish made to the West Bank. It's one that was really definitive in their time in Israel. We do that as we continue on Sports Byline.